Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Bring In The Experts webinar series that we've got running. Happy Wednesday morning. We'll just do a quick sound check. Can people just go onto the chat line at the bottom of your box there and say you can hear me? That would be fantastic. I'll just see, oh, lots of yeses coming through. Yep, 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 yep. Fantastic. Good to see that it's all working. Kim, if we can just do a quick sound check on you.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Once a quarter fish alive.
Oh, that was impressive. Can everybody hear Cam? Fantastic. Thanks for that, Cam. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Katrina Shanks. I'm the CEO of Financial Advice New Zealand. It's our pleasure to have you online today with us. It's pretty slow getting in. We've opened this webinar a bit earlier. We've just gone rolled over 3:30, so takes a while to everybody get through the gateway. So we'll just wait for a couple more minutes before we kick off with Cam. I'll have a few messages to give you in terms of, I live in Karori and I'm at the end of the fibre here in Karori, and so sometimes when our teenagers come online, I start to lag here. So if we do that, we may go to audio to make it a bit easier. And if I totally lag out, Sarah Christian, who is our policy and governance manager, she will come in and take over from me as well. So we do have a plan B if I go blackout. How we roll today is that I do this quick introduction, then we bring Cam on, who speaks for 20 to 25 minutes, and then we can ask questions and answers of him through the chat room. So at the bottom of your screen, you'll see a chat room sitting there, and you'll also see question answers. So you can privately chat to me if you want me to ask a question, or you can do a Q&A, which is public as well, and I'll facilitate these questions with Cam through the process. And so we do that because we have such a large number of people on. Everybody is on mute and everybody doesn't have their video going, so we can focus on the speakers. So that's kind of the process that we run. So you all know Cameron Bagri. He's a well-known personality and economist in New Zealand. He's going to provide an analysis of the economy now and post-COVID-19 with a view on the financial services sector. So Cameron has been an economist for 20 years. For over 11 years, he was the chief economist at ANZ, heading a team that was consistently ranked number one for its analysis of the New Zealand economy. He has a reputation for taking a forthright stand on even the hardest of economic issues. He's worked as an economist at the National Bank, Treasury and Stats New Zealand. His approach to economics is pragmatic and non-ideological. And that's why Cam is the perfect guest for us this morning. So Cam, welcome to this webinar and I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah, good morning and good morning, everybody. Look, what I thought I'd take you through is sort of five or six bigger picture themes to deliver a few sort of messages. Look, you know, I'm not legally allowed to provide financial advice, but I'm going to dish out one area of advice, and that is the need in the current economic environment for people to go get some good financial advice. Yeah, it's an imperative. Yeah, COVID is a lightning rod on people needing advice. Yeah, if you sit back, even stepping aside from the COVID environment, think about the environment prior to COVID. Yeah, we were in a low yield world. Well, now it's even worse. Yeah, people were taking on risk in search of yield. You know, everybody was jumping into commercial property, mum and dad investors. Yeah, people using, you know, Airbnb as a reason to buy a property to rent it out on the other side. Yeah, dividend yields were congregating down. Hawkland house prices were trading at 9 times incomes. Yeah, we've been in an environment where the returns have been turbocharged and life was pretty damn good. Well, we've just had that black swan event and boom, life is changing in front of our eyes. On some levels, we shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, we tend to get knocked around about every 10 years. Now, you go back 11 years, we had the GFC. Go back 11 years prior to that, the Asian crisis. About 10 years prior to that, 1987 to 1992, the world economy was very vulnerable on a whole lot of levels. And of course, it was not in a great shape to handle any shock when it came along, because interest rates were already effectively zero or negative in major jurisdictions around the globe. Your government debt levels were high, and we were seeing tremendous tension across governments around the globe. And in fact, within governments, within countries, you got Trump firing off pot shots at the World Health Organization. you've got the debate between Donald Trump versus the governors and the United States. You get United States versus China. We're in a very divided world as opposed to a united one. The way I think about this is pretty simple. I think it's a fundamental reset. Think about basic, risk has got out of line with the underlying returns. Risk premiums were far too low. The people that jump into the commercial property market thinking, oh, this is great, I'm getting a 2% higher yield above residential, well, you were getting that additional yield because of this thing called tenant risk. Well, tenant risk is going to be your Achilles heel now because, of course, you're going to lose your tenant. An awful lot of businesses are going to shut down on the other side. This is a big hit to the productive side of any economy. What does that mean? Lower incomes and lower living standards. Think about what the construction sector is going to look like going forward. Airports are going to be at low capacity for a long time. Planes are going to be parked up. It's going to take a long time for the accommodation sector to recover. But the productivity across the economy, for years to come, I think it's going to take a major knock. I think there's going to be some higher costs out of this on the other side. Now, you think about what we're going to do on the other side to make sure this thing doesn't come back in. It looks like New Zealand's getting on top of it. The strategy is to squash it, eliminate it. How are we going to remain, what's border control going to look like to make sure it's not going to come back in? Because, yes, an advanced Western society such as us can squash this thing with the right policy initiatives right up front. But think about what this is going to be like as it rivals around emerging market economies or around Africa, Turkey, Mexico, to the south of America, these sort of places. The idea that we're going to, we can completely eliminate it, I think is going to be a stretch in a world where it's got the ability to pop up anytime soon. What we're seeing also is some really incredible things. If anybody that's out there at the moment watching, oil markets, for example, oil turned negative in price, not last night, but the night before. The markets for oil prices popped up. They turned back into positive territory as we move from the May to the June contract. But the fact that oil prices at the moment are down around $13 a barrel just goes to show how much demand destruction there is. As we effectively take the global economy into what people are now calling, it's not the Great Depression, it's not the Great Recession, it's what they call the Great Lockdown. But when I see oil prices turn negative, that tells me that markets on some levels are broken. That sort of movement when oil was trading at -$30, -$40 a barrel, it sends a message that something is fundamentally wrong. And what does a collapse in oil prices mean for leveraged energy companies? So, of course, now you're going to start to think about credit markets. Will it spread to other markets? What about corn? And what about the input of corn into ethanol, these sort of things? We're in a world where ETF-based funds have distorted the market. People have been trading stuff they don't understand. Volatility's been incredible, exacerbated by ETFs. Algorithmic style trading as opposed to fundamental based trading. More and more of these tracker style funds. The process of price discovery. It has been seriously undermined because it's really been a bit of a case of follow the leader as opposed to actually doing the research. Central banks have been out there, their steps to make sure the financial plumbing is working has been welcome. It's been appropriate. But on some levels, central banks getting out there buying bonds is just undermining and distorting markets, moving them away from the economic fundamentals. And the more we see that sort of movement away from the so-called economic fundamentals or markets basically doing their job, the more I worry about the potential of what's called a W-shaped cycle. We come out one leg of the W in the next sort of 6 months, but eventually we get popped on the other side because we're distorting market behavior. A big thing that I'm focused on at the moment is just the level of complacency. Look, New Zealand could never have been ready. No one could have been ready to what is a black swan event. It's like the New Zealand economy is like Sky Entertainment, and we've just had that Netflix moment. If you have a look at the World Economic Forum at Davos, they talked an awful lot about risks out there, disruption. Well, infectious diseases, what we're dealing with at the moment, is just one of many risks that are around the globe. Yeah, complacency's been rife. Yeah, there was a survey out by Suncorp last year, sorry, in 2018, that basically told us, yeah, New Zealand businesses expect the pace of change, expect the pace of disruption to slow. Now, disruption is not just about technology. It's not just about, you know, Netflix, these sort of organisations. It's Mother Nature. It's earthquakes. It's government policy changes. It's the potential for these sort of, you know, black swan events. And the black swan event we've got at the moment is obviously a health-related issue. Yeah, but if you think about the early stages of COVID, you know, what did it do when China basically shut things down? It threw the global supply chain into complete disarray. Yeah, so there are economic derivatives off this on the other side. If I think about, you know, what is COVID going to do? It's going to turbocharge some things that should have been taking place anyway. An example here is online shopping. You know, education sector, the tertiary sector, should have been thinking a lot quicker about what their online proposition is going to look like. Well, they've just received the wake-up call because they're going to need that online proposition. You think about what happened after the GFC to banks. Yeah, the amount of different regulation that got sort of pushed through the system in response. Yeah, well, government's going to want something on the other side of this particular government, and it looks like governments are going to have to step up and provide, you know, loans which could be potentially converted into equity for those bigger businesses across New Zealand that are being slotted as we speak. You know, I think we're going to end up in an environment where there's going to be limits, constraints on how much borrowing firms can have on their balance sheet. You know, less leverage, we go to a more conservatively geared sort of model. Personally, I think, you know, directors are going to push that way anyway. There's a lot of debate at the moment over the shape of the recovery and what it's going to look like. And it's, yeah, there's a whole lot of candidates, broadly speaking, that if we step away from the W, which is what I worried about, the three candidates are what we call the V, the U, and the L. Now, as of last week, global equities and New Zealand were basically betting on it being a V-shaped outcome. You know, and a V-shaped outcome is that when the economy gets back to levels you were predicting 3 to 6 months ago. Yeah, so if I could go have a look at Treasury, for example, yeah, you know, they provided their half-year economic and fiscal update forecast December last year. The numbers they put out Monday last week had, under every single scenario, your real GDP, you know, the volume part of the economy, getting back to 2024 levels as predicted in the half-year economic and fiscal update by 2024. Now, we basically get slotted up front, you know, deep recession, but there is an incredibly strong recovery on the other side. Yeah, but the basic assumption that they have is that there is no long-term disruption. It is short-term dislocation alone. We get back into it, and it's happy days. Now, to get a V-shaped outcome, or what markets were betting on over the past sort of few weeks, I think, to be fair, markets have started to move away from a V-shaped outcome, starting to think a lot more about a U or the L. To get a V-shaped outcome, you've got to see the building blocks of your economy, which is sort of potential growth, how fast you can grow over the long term unchanged. So no real change in labour input growth. No change in capital stock formation or the investment potential across the economy. And no change in productivity growth. Look, I can challenge those three foundations on a whole lot of levels. Yeah, there is going to be some changes to labour import growth. Yeah, we've got border control. Yeah, so migration is not going to be the numbers we've been used to getting, in excess of 40,000 per year. Is there going to be some changes to the fundamental in regard to capital stock formation, investment? The answer is hell yes. You know, I think the process of credit intermediation is going to change. You know, the balance between risk versus return got out of whack. It is going to get realigned. So credit accessibility is going to be an issue. There is going to be a big change to productivity growth. Now, you think about what's going on at the moment in regard to unused capital. You know, those airports that are basically vacant. Think about a construction site. And think about the hoops that a construction firm now needs to go through to make sure that we have some form of distancing on the site. Can we have multiple firms on the same site? The answer is no. Look, I think we're going to see a quasi-bounce. Yeah, as we go down from, you know, hopefully we don't spend too long on a 3+, we go down to a 3, a 2, and a 1. Yeah, I think we'll see what we call a quasi-V. You know, we go 60 to 70% back up the other side, but then it's a hard slog. You know, it's a cross between a U and an L. And a U and an L is basically you never go back to where you were. You know, we do eventually over time, but a couple of years later. So we don't make it back to what the Treasury was forecasting in 2024. We sort of get there by 2026 because we've had asset destruction, you know, economic disruption right up front. And of course, you know, I think the trend growth rate of the economy, you know, how fast the economy can go, it's not going to be the same anywhere around the globe as what we were in a pre-COVID world. You know, people are asking me for benchmarks in regard to how I think about this thing. It's not the GFC. You know, the GFC was a V. It's not the Asian crisis. The Asian crisis was a V. It's not the Great Depression. You know, the Great Depression was 3 years in a row of negative growth. And what we didn't see in the Great Depression was the degree of policy stimulus that we've seen in the current instance. Now, policymakers have stepped up to the plate. Yeah, that's going to stem some of the bleeding. Yeah, so we're going to bounce a bit. But I think about this with a 1987 to 1992 sort of lens. It's going to take a long time for the economy to come right. Yeah, you know, some sectors, agriculture, you know, being disrupted there by droughts, probably their main issue. As long as they can keep the supply chain open, then agriculture is not going to take too much of a hit. Yeah, but for sectors such as tourism, yeah, it's an L. It is a real hard, drawn-out slog on the other side. Yeah, do not underestimate the structural changes we're going to see out of this on the other side. Yeah, travel is going to look fundamentally different. Now, think about what happened to travel post 9/11 when, you know, security control. Well, now we're going to have to control for some sort of, yeah, health. In what way? What is it going to look like? We don't know. We've had the world's biggest working from home trial, subject to your internet working, your Wi-Fi being sufficient. Well, it works. Yeah, what's that going to mean for commercial building demand? Because I think people are liking living in T-shirts and shorts. Your savings buffers across households are going to need rebuilt. Yeah, the household savings rate's been negative for 19 of the past 25 years. We actually didn't have too much of a buffer in the first place. What do we tend to see when you go through a major shock? People are going to focus on rebuilding that precautionary savings buffer. Your business cash flow is going to need to be rebuilt and balance sheets strengthened. Yeah, we know we're going to see more regulation on the other side. You know, the more the business sector gets out there and takes the government money, where, be honest, I see some businesses probably shouldn't be taking that money, the more the government is going to feel the need or want to push up the corporate tax rate out the other side. Their discretionary spending is going to be slashed. You know, in fact, I think most people are probably a little bit like me. You're amazed how much money you've actually got in your check account at the moment, because the only thing you're spending money on is actually food. You know, all the discretionary stuff is gone to zero. The government is going to be a bigger player across the economy. You know, they're going to have to step up to the plate, and I think, you know, implicitly backstop a lot more businesses. Digital economy will get turbocharged. Imagine if we tried to bring in digital tracing of individuals last year. Now, there would have been an absolute uproar. Well, now it's going to come in because it's going to be part of the system we're going to need to make sure we got this thing under control. Sport, yeah, what's the new reality? Where do the sponsors come from? Yeah, how's the government going to pay down debt? By my estimates, the government is borrowing in excess of $100 billion. Now, there's a future generation of taxpayers. They're going to have to pay that back. Yeah, what does the world look like if globalization starts to reverse? You know, we are going to be in an environment where we're less interconnected around the globe. You know, what does that look like? What does that mean for potentially manufacturing coming back home? What does it mean for New Zealanders potentially coming back home? Just quickly, just some numbers on the scale of the hits. People are thinking about this through a GDP lens. The New Zealand economy is $300 billion in GDP terms. But if you look at total sales and income across the business sector, it is $700 billion. Now, divide that by 12, and what do you got? Just under $60 billion per month is what the potential hit you are taking. Now, let's assume we've got half the economy in lockdown for a month. Now, you're talking $30 billion. There's more than $100 billion in salaries and wages paid, $85 billion in operating profit collected. Now, so there's the $7, $8 billion a month. Now, there's $480 billion worth of debt across the economy, $280 in housing, and about $120 across the business sector. The commercial property is $40 billion. Now, yeah, tenant risk within the commercial property market, they've been basically ignored for a long time. Well, boy, is there a wake-up call going on there. The government loan scheme is available for businesses that can borrow up to $80 million. They can borrow $500,000. Now, it's a drop in the bucket. Now, there's 57,000 businesses in New Zealand that turn over between $1 and $50 million. Now, they've got total revenue of $260 billion in a 12-month period. Now, the package that's on the table is tin pot 6.25. Yeah, what we've seen is that the government step up to the plate really well with the wage assistance package, but we're going to need to get money in firms' pockets pretty damn quickly. Another theme that I'm looking at the moment is that pre-COVID, there were a whole lot of what I call fights or spats that were going on. You know, we had the battle between the returns to capital versus labour, you know, i.e., you know, what do you pay people? What are people actually sort of worth? And, you know, your corporations were doing pretty well and wages were pretty low. You know, we had the battle between the young versus the old. You know, housing was at the epicentre. Yeah, you know, we've had the battle between shareholder-based capitalism versus stakeholder-based capitalism, i.e. the short game versus the long game. We've had debates over the role of government and calls for a universal basic income, you know, free market versus nationalisation, government involvement, and tension over globalisation. You know, you have Trump versus China, cybersecurity, Huawei, Google, Facebook. You know, we were getting into a pretty intense debate anyway. And then COVID comes along, and COVID is just an absolute lightning rod on a lot of these themes. Yeah, so what are we seeing at the moment? Yeah, firms that are taking the wage subsidy, well, they're getting exposed if it looks like they might be rorting the system. Yeah, we saw a couple of New Worlds that claimed the subsidy. Well, they pretty quickly paid the money back. We saw Fletcher's get popped in the newspaper for the cut and pay to their staff versus what the executives were taking. I just saw a couple of meat companies the other day that they've claimed $77.7 million of taxpayer money. They are still open. Yeah, we've seen some landlords send some pretty stiff letters to tenants. Well, they've pretty prickly backtracked on that sort of stuff when they've been exposed in the media. Law firms, some taking the subsidies and some not. You know, businesses need to get out there and think and do the front page test. You make sure you do the right sort of behaviour, because if you don't, odds are you're going to appear on the front page of the paper. Your young versus old was housing. Now it's about jobs. And New Zealanders have been pretty well behaved. Now, looking at this, we've bought into the government program, but the longer this moves on, the more you're going to start to see society get pretty annoyed and start to push back. Now, we're starting to see that in some countries around the globe, particularly the likes of America. And New Zealand is still playing nice. And thankfully, we're moving from a 4 to an effectively a 3+. But I would not like to stay too long in a 3+. because you're going to get the younger generation that's starting to start to think about jobs. And they're going to be far more afraid of losing their jobs, their livelihood, than COVID. And of course, when you see massive economic destruction, you're going to see social fallout. You know, Treasury's baseline is that the unemployment rate goes to double digit. Now, traditionally, the Maori and Pacific Island unemployment rate is double the national average. So what does that mean? Central scenario is that we probably end up with unemployment for Maori, Pacific Island, is going to be 20% plus. Yeah, that is an absolute social recipe for social anarchy across some parts of New Zealand. Is shareholder capitalism versus stakeholder capitalism? Well, banks have been at the epicenter of that, you know, changing their attention, focus more on the long game versus the short game. Yeah, we're going to see more calls for a universal basic income. Yeah, COVID is just going to accelerate. Yeah, globalization is going to reverse. It's going to start to unwind as we start to think about the other side. There's three stages to what we're going through at the moment. Yeah, stage one is crisis management, liquidity, cash flow. Yeah, there's 450,000 businesses out there that turn over less than 5 million. You know, the reality is that a lot of these businesses are not going to be turning back on the doors. They're going to fail. But the second thing we need is a recovery opening plan. We're starting to see that as we go to a 3+. There's obviously going to be, you know, border controls around for a long time. The government will roll out more of infrastructure spend, but it won't be enough. You know, what we're going to need is, you know, a strategy to pursue what is a massive structural adjustment. Yeah, we're going to need to shake the tree across New Zealand in regards to microeconomic reform, both within central government and local government. And businesses are going to need to look at themselves pretty hard in regard to what they can do going forward. Yeah, we're going to need a ruthless obsession with getting people back into paid work. Yeah, we're going to need to look at the lessons from COVID, particularly things in regard to, you know, health, but also the supply chain. There's going to be consumer shifts. There's going to be new behaviours. We're going to need microeconomic reform. Yeah, we're going to need to get the economy coming aggressively out the other side. It won't be a V, but we need it to be more of a U than an L. Yeah, we do not want that stumbly, bumbly L-shaped cycle, or potentially the W. Look, one final observation. One of the things I'm thinking about at the moment is the path for interest rates for the next decade. And we know, and if I look at bond markets at the moment, yeah, they're telling us that interest rates are going to remain low for a very, very, very long time. Yeah, but if I sit there and think about the degree of destruction we are seeing out there around the globe and the globe to the supply side of the economy, yeah, if I look at, yeah, risk premiums are going to rise, credit is going to get repriced, I think globalization is going to take a few steps back. Yeah, that will remove some downwards pressure on inflation. Inflation is also, I think, going to be one of those mechanisms that we're going to get use at some stage to get rid of the debt burden. You know, just inflate it away. Yeah, but I see Virgin is bust. You know, what is that going to mean for air travel in Australia? Well, in the near term, one provider, Qantas. But what is that going to mean down the track? Because I don't think there'll be another provider competing with Qantas in 10 years' time when we go back to some sort of degree of normalcy. Yeah, I do worry that out of this thing, a long way down the track, we are going to see a really good bout of inflation. Yeah, but that's tomorrow's story. That's the long game as opposed to the short game. So, look, I'll just stop there. I think that was about 25 minutes and we'll take questions.
Cam, that was absolutely outstanding. Thanks so much for that. Certainly a lot of food for thought, especially that last comment, I've got to say. So I've got a whole lot of Q&As for you, so I'll just read a few up for you and you can just respond to them.
Yep.
Why do world share markets react very negatively to a very sharp drop in May future oil prices? Surely this is positive for oil import countries and their businesses, example China.
Well, if you look at, I guess, what people have woken up to in regard to the oil market is that it is a barometer in regard to the degree of demand destruction we are seeing out there. You know, people are not travelling. You know, people are not jumping in the cars. When's the last time anybody filled up their car? If we have a look at heavy traffic, light traffic volumes across New Zealand, they've absolutely collapsed. Now that is just an indicator of the hits we are seeing in regard to the economy from a demand perspective. Now, of course, you know, oil prices hits both, you know, all different parts of the economy. So if you're an oil consumer, it's actually not a bad story. But of course, we're not consuming at the moment. So we're not actually getting that benefit of it. All we're seeing is the destruction on the other side. What we also know out of the energy sector is that the energy sector's got an awful lot of debt. You know, we've seen a Mexican standoff basically between the Russians and the Saudis. They've just started to, you know, produce more oil at a time demand destruction is happening on the other side. And they're actually, I think, trying to destroy the US shale oil industry. They're trying to undermine America because they've got an awful lot of leverage. You know, the American shale oil industry is not going to survive if oil prices, you know, remain around $10 to $20 a barrel for the next 6 months. And that looks that's looking likely.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Here's another one. You've mentioned that markets are broken. How do you think overseas economic instability will impact on New Zealand exporters?
Well, the good news at the moment is rule 101 for any government around the globe is to make sure that people have got food on the table. And thankfully, you know, New Zealand provides food and everybody's rushing off to the supermarket. Yeah, but it'll be illusory, ignorant of us not to expect we are going to take a hit. Yes, so if I have a look at global dairy trade prices overnight, yeah, they're down about 5 to 6%. Yeah, traditionally, what goes on is that when the global economy gets weak, you know, discretionary spend gets impacted. People are not spending, you know, particularly the US consumer. If the US consumer is not buying, that's going to hit China. China is a tremendously important market for New Zealand. You know, there's a whole lot of different avenues we look at in regard to how it's going to impact New Zealand. There's both the demand for the volume of goods, but the channel we really take it is through the price. You know, because we don't produce widgets. You know, we produce food. We've got to get it out there. We've got to get rid of it. So if the world's not buying, we tend to have to take a bit of a haircut in regard to price to shift the stuff. You know, what we also look for in regard to, you know, the global scene transmitting to New Zealand is not just through the demand for goods and services. And obviously travel is going to zero. And that's a big industry. Yeah, education as well. You know, we look at the financial leakages. Yeah, New Zealand's pretty reliant upon offshore capital. We run what's called a current account deficit. You know, the banking sector is about 20-25% funded from overseas. If global investors start to get nervous around the globe, they're going to demand a little bit more of a risk premium to be compensated for risk on the other side. So the cost of credit goes up, the cost of funding for banks increases. Normally, the New Zealand dollar acts as a shock absorber. It's a playoff risk. If you have people tend to get risk averse around the globe, i.e. equity markets are coming down, in a normal environment, you see the New Zealand dollar follow down on the other side. One of the ones that I'm watching really closely at the moment are financial linkages and particularly the banks. You know, we don't want rules for the New Zealand banks being dictated for Australian economic conditions. Yeah, New Zealand's taken a bit more of an upfront hit to get on top of this sort of thing, but we kind of hope there's going to be some opportunities on the other side. Yeah, if we can squash this thing, yeah, we've got brand value galore in regard to selling New Zealand as a sanctuary. Yeah, what does that mean? We need to squash it, make sure we can contain it, get it out. But then we start to think about what those opportunities are on the other side and get these well-heeled, wealthy people around the globe and get them coming down here, not just buying houses, buying a farm. We want them to invest in New Zealand. We want them to creating jobs.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Cam. That's what we need is investment. Here's another one. Any thoughts on government investment and spending via monetary financing and helicopter money? Is this a viable option and would it work?
Well, if I have a look at what's the economic imperative at the moment, it's supporting the business sector because they don't have liquidity, they don't have cash flow. Yeah, what some countries have done around the globe is to, you know, give people $1,000 to $1,500. Now, conceptually, it sounds really good because it's a cushion, support, encouraging people to get there and spend the money. Well, I guess the immediate question I'd have to that at the moment, what are we going to spend the money on? Things are shut. Well, yeah, I think we'd be far better off providing an expanded lending facility, you're getting money into SMEs. Yeah, that's our big point of vulnerability across New Zealand. You know, the SMEs are not like the big corporates. Yeah, they're not like the Auckland airports, the Kathmandus, when they can go out there and, okay, they needed to do a capital raise to shore up the health of their balance sheet, to make sure they've got liquidity on hand to work through an extended period of limited sales or volumes in regard to Auckland. If I were to look at most businesses across New Zealand, they do not have access to capital markets. Yeah, so we've got to get money into business pockets. Yeah, I think that we need to be re-looking at that government loan scheme in regard to how that's operational. I'm hearing it's hellishly hard to access the money.
Yeah, no, there's some talk around that as well. You know, it's certainly not as easy as it looks to access the money, but I think the intent is right. And like all policy that's coming out now, it's been developed really rapidly and it's evolving all the time, I think, as well.
Yeah, so, and we need to pour some sunlight over what banks could be charging for that sort of stuff as well. You know, I'm hearing stories out there, you know, overdrafts now at 20% plus, you know. Banks need to, the Reserve Bank governor came out the other day and said, your banks need to be courageous. He's absolutely right. But what we also need is local government to come out and be courageous as well. It is ridiculous that we've got some local authorities that are considering putting up rates. They get with the program. The magic number is zero.
Yeah, at their own peril, right?
Oh, we've been very fixated for the short game for a long time. Businesses that show the right behaviour need to be rewarded on the other side. Yeah, so if I could work out in a supermarket whether I was buying AFCO meat or whether I was buying Green Lee versus Alliance or Silver Fern Farms, I know which meat I'll be buying because two of those companies didn't take the check and two of them did.
Yeah. And that's the transparency of that system that's in place now, right? Where we can see what's happening behind the scenes. So here's another question. What's your opinion on the short-term future of the New Zealand economy versus the Australian, and more specifically the cross rate Australian-New Zealand dollar?
Well, New Zealand's taking a more upfront hit to manage it. Now, I hope we're going to see positive benefits out of that on the other side, because otherwise we're paying one hell of a price. Now, if we see those positive benefits on the other side, I think the New Zealand Aussie dollar goes back up. Yeah, if we can embrace a story, that offers New Zealand something unique in the global stage, there could be a wonderful opportunity here. But we are paying the price. We're taking bigger near-term economic hits. What has happened? Kiwi Aussie dollar's gone down from 99 cents, it's sub 95, something like that. At the moment, if we can get the story right and get on top of this, the cross rate will go back up. But if we've paid the price without the benefit on the other side, the cross rate's going to go down.
Quite a few comments around what do you think is going to happen in the housing market and what do you think is going to happen with mortgage rates? So if we can grab those two at the same time, maybe?
Well, where the mortgage rates move by 25, 30, 50 basis points, who really cares in the current environment? Yeah, they're already low. What we are seeing behind the scenes is that banks are tightening up the availability of credit. Yes, they are open, but if you go have a chat to them, they're doing a lot more checks because the biggest risk they've got out there at the moment is that the person they write out the loan to or give the loan is not going to have a job. If I have a look at the property market during the global financial crisis, house prices were down about 8-odd percent across the country. The unemployment rate peaked at 6.7. Now, based on the numbers we're seeing signing up for the job seeker benefit, I reckon the unemployment rate by the end of April is going to be past 6.7%. It's on the way to being double digit. Yeah, so the first leg of this for the property market, I think pencil in a fall of at least 10%. Yeah, higher end sort of markets, Auckland house prices 9 times incomes, obviously had one hell of a good previous 6 to 7 months, are going to be vulnerable. Queenstown, Wanaka, it is going to be very difficult down there. Now, as a former resident of Central Otago, I think it's Christmas because I'm going to be stepping up on the bid on the other side. And sometimes we forget there's always two parties to every transaction. There's a buyer and the seller. Well, things are going to get skewed a lot more towards the buyer. There's going to be some stuff that's going to need to move out there. You know, people that have been buying properties expecting to get peripheral income, secondary income from Airbnb. Well, that peripheral income is going to zero. Yeah, the mortgage holidays are in place for 6 months. That's going to help. The Reserve Bank's just put out a proposal to relax loan-to-value ratio restrictions. That's going to help. But the bigger picture here is simply about how many people are going to lose their jobs.
No, that's absolutely right. So there's more questions down the chat room about the LVR levels and what do you think the impact of that's going to be?
As I just said, it's a marginal tweak. Yeah, so for that marginal buyer that doesn't have a deposit but's got job security and is earning pretty good income, relaxing the loan to value ratio restrictions is going to open the door for them. But it's marginal. Yeah, the bigger picture here, I think, is going to be about satisfying the bank's established credit process. And what is the epicenter of the credit process for the banks? It's having the income, having the security within your job to make sure you can service that debt. Yeah, so yes, it's opening the door. It's providing a little bit of a tweak, but it's not a game changer for the market.
Okay, here's a really interesting one. What do you think government support will start? When do you think government support will start discriminating between sectors depending on whether each sector has a realistic future?
Well, it's
not a policy question.
It's not just me. I don't think we can apply a sector by sector based lens on this. Yeah, we're going to see within the tourism sector, some businesses will survive this. Now, if they've got the ability to reorientate away from international towards domestic. Now, so if I have a look at the tourism market is 17 billion of international tourism. Yeah, local tourism is about 23. Yeah, so we're going to need a call to arms for people to spend local. There's 4 million people come in and visit New Zealand. There's about 3 million New Zealanders go out and holiday out the other side. Well, I don't think we're going to be holidaying out in other countries for a very long time. So there's 3 million potential clients the tourism sector has got. They're probably going to sharpen their pencil in regard to thinking about pricing, because New Zealanders won't pay what the foreigners are paying. So there's going to be winners and losers within that. Yeah, if I have a look at the construction sector, right, have a look at two major players listed on the New Zealand construction, on the NZX, Fletcher's and Steel & Tube. Now, sector's been going pretty well for a number of years. Those organisations haven't. What's the lessons in that? Doesn't matter what the broad macroeconomic story is, the resilience or performance of any business when push comes to shove comes down to microeconomics. What are we going to see? The government's going to have to make some hard decisions on a case-by-case basis. They're going to have to step in into some sectors more than others. We don't want, as a taxpayer, for the government to be writing out blank checks. We've got no possibility of getting the money back. Yeah, have a think about the lessons we saw of South Canterbury Finance.
Yes, another question earlier on was around, you said that people shouldn't be investing in the share market. What do you recommend that people should be investing in?
Well, I didn't say people shouldn't be investing in the share market. I'm sitting there myself. Conservative with my stuff the end of last year. In fact, it was September last year. And watch markets go up, much to my frustration. Markets went down and then they've gone back up again, much to my frustration. But my strategy is that I'm going to get back in at some stage, but it'll be selective and quality will count. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all approach that can apply here, because I think every asset class is going to get reset. So my inclinations, what I'm doing with my own stuff is I'm sitting really conservative. You're waiting for those selective buying opportunities. I don't think we're anywhere near the bottom yet for any market. In fact, for some markets, commercial property, residential property, we haven't even started to see the fall yet.
Yeah, that's right.
There's some sectors in equities, and I'm not an equity analyst, right? But I really like aquaculture. I think that can be a big part of New Zealand's economic future. And maybe the old adage, never waste a crisis, applies here. Maybe we can turbocharge some stuff in aquaculture that pre-COVID we would have been probably a little bit slow to do. But now when you've got the economic imperative to get people back into pay work, if you look at what we did in Christchurch, we sort of, circumvented the rules a little bit to make sure that things could get done after the earthquake, and we need the same sort of approach.
So this was a really interesting one. So what do you think is the manageable level of borrowing as a percentage of GDP?
Well, if you look at where, there's nothing wrong with borrowing, right? As long as you're getting productivity growth out of that borrowing on the other side. Now, the problem at the moment is that New Zealand's got a pretty leveraged balance sheet. So it's a total credit across New Zealand is about 150% of GDP. Yeah, household debt to income is most of that. Your household debt to disposable income is about 163%. And that's just unproductive capital. It's not investing in the real productive side of New Zealand. Yeah, so it's an old sort of story in regard to, borrow, but make sure we get growth out of this on the other side. Yeah, that the government is leveraging off their own balance sheet for obvious reasons, because they've got a big balance sheet. Yeah, but we want to make sure that a lot of that borrowing, and they're going to gear up a pretty big infrastructure program on the other side to help with recovery, yet that has got to be quality spend, not the amount of spend that we need to be focused on. Now, Provincial Growth Fund, waste of time. Right? Kiwi Build, waste of time. And cancel the money in those programs and get it redirected into other areas where we're going to get some economic bang for our buck on the other side.
That's great, Cam. So we've got about 5 minutes left until we start closing. So how would you like to close with financial advisors and some advice you can give them right now about what they should be considering when they're talking to their clients?
Step up.
Yeah, we two words.
What we need is for leaders across New Zealand, to really step up. In the words of Adrian Orr, be courageous. Yeah. You get out there and help New Zealanders out. Yeah, we need people with big balance sheets to be helping people with small balance sheets, because the people with small balance sheets are going to go broke. Yeah, so now's the time to be deploying. If you've got a big balance sheet, odds are you're probably going to get a cheaper asset. So it's a smart investment move as well. But there's an awful lot of confusion out there in regard to what's going on. Hope is not a strategy, but we've got to give people some hope. Yeah. So when I talked about the three stages, crisis management, a recovery opening plan, and then an outright strategy to take us rocketing out the other side, they are not mutually exclusive. They are overlapping. Yeah, we need to be starting to think about what the strategy is, how we're going to embrace the future right here and now, because that might determine whether a business shuts down or embraces the future and really starts to gear up and think about what the opportunities could be out the other side. Ironically, you can actually make some of your smartest, best decisions out of the most difficult economic climate you ever see, because hey presto, that's when things tend to be very realistically priced.
Well, I think I just got the quote of the session, Cam, which is hope is not a strategy, but we have to give people some hope. And I think that's a really nice way to end this. So, Cam, thanks so much for your time today. You've been sensational. And, we've had over 400 participants online today. So it's been well attended. So thank you for that. And it just shows you, the integrity and the level of knowledge that you bring to the sector. So yeah, thanks, Cam. Just like to finish off, we have a webinar tomorrow with the company's office, which is more technical. If you're looking at becoming a FAP or struggling with their website at all, come along onto that, 10 o'clock tomorrow. Then next week on Wednesday and Thursday, we've got Denton's Kensington Swan giving us a legal update on the wage subsidy and commercial leasing and a whole lot of other responses to COVID-19. And then on the Friday, we've got Keith Abraham coming back again, who was sensational last time. 2 weeks ago, and he's doing a follow-up webinar, which he was well worth your time. So thank you everybody for coming online today. I hope you all have a nice Anzac weekend, which is this weekend, and stay safe in your bubbles. And we will see you all again. And thanks very much, Ken. You've been amazing. Bye.